All right, Mason in Ireland, Brian Kamenetsky filling in for Mace. I mentioned, Brian, earlier in the show that Liverpool won the Premier League title for the first time in 30-plus years of being in the Premier League. You know who's a part owner of Liverpool? Do you know this?
I forget who owns which team.
LeBron.
Is that LeBron?
He has a minority interest in Liverpool. Yeah. And so maybe that's a
LeBron's
good...
LeBron's got his hands in everything.
Well, maybe that's foreshadowing. Maybe Liverpool winning after a 30-year drought means the Lakers will win after a 10-year drought.
Which, for the Lakers, is like 30 years.
But we're going to pivot back to baseball here. The Dodgers are heavily favored to win their division, and most people think the Dodgers are going to the World Series. They're projected to face the Yankees. They're absolutely loaded. A few things that are going to help the Dodgers. Number one, the universal DH, Brian. The Dodgers have more bats than they can use, which means a guy like Justin Turner doesn't have to play every day in the field. That's one thing that'll move towards their favor. They're also extremely deep. And with the expanded rosters, that plays right into their lap. We mentioned earlier in the show the Dodgers have the fourth easiest schedule in all of baseball. And to help us break all this down is Alden Gonzalez, who is a multimedia reporter for ESPN covering the Dodgers right now. And Alden, thank you for doing this, man. Long time no talk. How are you holding up?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Doing good. I know Andrew Friedman talked today. Did he say anything, Alden, that surprised you?
No, nothing that necessarily surprised me. But he did. Him and Dave both said things that were notable. And the biggest takeaway that I had, I think we spoke to them for about 40 minutes, but they constantly stressed just how flexible and nimble you have to be through this season. Andrew said that anybody who says that they know how this is all going to play out is just kidding themselves. This is something that's going to change week by week. Andrew said that some members of the organization have already tested positive for COVID-19, that he expects that as this season plays out, even as the early part of spring training plays out, that a bunch of people are going to test positive for the coronavirus. And it's just going to be about how teams assess risk. It's going to be about how players self-police themselves. It's going to be about how teams can quarantine and isolate those players. And there's no, I think Dave said at one point, like there's no rule book for this. You know, Major League Baseball did put together a 100-page operations manual, but even they'll admit that that's going to evolve constantly. Week one of spring training will look completely different from week two as they start getting together and having a feel for this. So, I mean, I love it that baseball's back simply because I love the sport of baseball. But I got to be honest, I'm also a little bit trepidatious about playing baseball just because of the concern of overall public health. And I have no idea what to expect this season. I hope it's a fun year. I hope people can stay healthy and safe. But I don't think anybody has any idea how this season is going to play out.
Alden, the NBA has kind of a very public and very prescribed way that they're going to deal with corona and testing. And all this stuff's been very, very well laid out. It's there for everybody. Does Major League Baseball have a plan yet that is as concrete as what the NBA has done? Or does it kind of depend on what happens over the next few weeks as teams start to get back towards spring training?
No, baseball has a very detailed plan for how this is going to work. I spent the last two nights reading through that operations manual that they sent out. They sent it out to teams, and I'm still a little fuzzy about a lot of things, but players are going to get tested. I think it's every other day. I think they need to test negative for the coronavirus twice in order to be allowed back into the facilities, but there are a bunch of other guidelines that they're going to have to meet before that. And as you guys have probably seen, I mean, there's just a bunch of things that baseball is implementing to just kind of maintain the social distancing, even when they're in a facility with a bunch of players who have tested negative for the coronavirus. And it goes as far as players having to bring their own baseballs to the bullpen to throw bullpen sessions, or bringing their own donuts to the on-deck circle. Pitchers can't go to their hand to get a better grip on the baseball, so they can carry a wet rag in their back pocket. I mean, I don't know how these things are going to be enforced. It's just so much going on at one time. But, I mean, there are details in that operations manual that about just how you need to put the toilet seat down when you're using the bathroom in the airport, or make sure that if you're going to shower in the clubhouse.
Well, that's just common courtesy, Alden, to do that at the airport. I mean, that's just being nice to the person who comes next to you.
Yeah, and you know, you got to wash your hands. I mean, I guess we all should be washing our hands all the time, even when there isn't.
I don't need a manual to tell me to wash my hands at the airport.
Right, right. Well, but do you need a manual, though, to tell you that you need to wear certain footwear if you're going to use the shower? And I guess you know what? Maybe that's also common decency, too. But I think it's safe to say that not all of these would have been abided by under normal circumstances, which is why they need to put it in a manual. But seriously, like, I have never read anything as thorough as that operations manual. And granted, I haven't read the NBA's, but even given how thorough that is from Major League Baseball, I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff that they're missing, and there's a bunch of stuff that's going to come up that they didn't anticipate.
We're talking to Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Dodgers for ESPN. Alden, I was surprised. Mason and I were talking to somebody 10 days ago. I think we were talking to Bill Plunkett, who covers the team for the Register and like 10 other papers. And Bill told me in his opinion, it was not a lock that Gavin Lux is going to be the Dodgers' second baseman, that they were going back and forth as to whether or not they would want to play some combination of Kike or Chris Taylor or Max Muncy over there, and that Lux could, in Bill's opinion, start the season in the minors. That shocked me. Do you agree with that assessment, that Lux might not be on the Dodgers roster, and even if he is, wouldn't be playing every day?
I'm not shocked by that. I was with Plunkett in spring training when a lot of this was talked about, and they did. I don't think it was just sort of coach speak. I think it's real, and it's not an indictment on Gavin Lux, who, I mean, the Dodgers are, I think it goes without saying, just how high the Dodgers are on Gavin Lux, and it, you know, you could tell by just how, just their reluctance to include him in a multitude of trades over these last few years. But Gavin Lux is still very young. Gavin Lux came up down the stretch last year, and he was a little bit up and down. And I think it was a situation, and I think it's the same situation now, too, even though the season's shorter, where the Dodgers have so much depth where, and you name some of the guys, they could play Kike Hernandez at second, they could play Chris Taylor, they could play Max Muncy, guys that they're paying more money to who are more experienced. It's a testament to their depth that they need to see Gavin Lux really perform before he gets a guaranteed spot. I think on any other team, absolutely, Gavin Lux is going to be one of your future faces of the franchise. He's going to be your guy on day one. He was already up with the club last year. But I don't think it hurts them in any way to say, like, let's see what he has. But I will be interested to see, though, how that changes. And we'll be able to talk a little bit more about it as we get into spring training, or whatever it is you want to call this period. Because the season's shorter and the margin for error is a lot smaller, I'd be wondering if that changes a little bit, and they just say right now, Gavin Lux is our guy. That I could definitely foresee maybe a change of tone there slightly.
But Alden, we're talking to Alden Gonzalez, multimedia reporter, covers the baseball and the NFL for ESPN. Where would he play? Like, if the idea is like you need to see Gavin Lux develop in the minor leagues, what do you do in a season where there really isn't a minor leagues?
Yeah, that's part of it. And I think that's part of some of the difficult decisions that teams are going to weigh. I think you got to understand. So teams are going to be able to have 30 players for the first couple of weeks of the season. Then it's 28, then it's 26. I think Gavin Lux is going to be, at the very least, one of those active players all the way through. because I see him being among the top 30. Then I see him being among the top 28. And by then, I think he'll be among the 26 or so, if he, considering he plays okay. But that's what's really complicated about this. So teams have a 60-player pool that they could designate. I think the deadline is Sunday to designate that player pool of 60 guys. And one thing that Andrew Friedman brought up today is that he's not so sure if other players who fit outside of that top 60 are going to be able to even work out somewhere else. He's still waiting on that clarification from Major League Baseball. And if that ends up not being the case, this applies more so to younger guys, not necessarily Gavin Lux, but if that ends up not being the case, that's going to impact his decision as to who's in those top 60, because he might, they're probably not going to go through 60 guys. I mean, at least they hope they don't go through 60 guys. So what they're going to have to end up doing is the prospects that whose development they really value, young guys who are not even close to the major leagues, are going to end up being in that 60-player pool just because they need them to get reps. They need them to get baseball reps with the team, because there could very well be a situation where if you're not in that top 60, you simply can't play baseball this year, and that's going to hurt the development of a lot of their prospects.
We're talking to Alden Gonzalez. Alden, last thing for you. Most people, almost everybody we've talked to, thinks the Dodgers are either going to end up in the World Series or at least be a major force to be reckoned with in the playoffs. They could like fall into what they fell into last year and run into a hot Nationals team or something, but I don't know anybody who's not picking the Dodgers to go far. If they don't, if something goes wrong, what's their Achilles heel? Do they have a weakness that they're concerned about or that you think they need to address?
No, they do not. I think their bullpen got better. I think they have far better options for designated hitters than anybody in the National League. I know fans would have wanted them to have gotten a Gerrit Cole or a Steven Strasburg over the offseason, but you compare their rotation to anybody else's in the game, I think they're probably still top five, top seven, something like that. So, look, that. I hope this doesn't come off insensitive or overly blunt, but I think the Achilles heel for any team, given what we're going through, given this pandemic, is going to be players testing positive for the coronavirus, because this is still
right.
a very real thing,
COVID.
Obviously, that's
yeah.
going on in our society. So
yeah, it's a good
that
point.
Would be it.
All right, well, most
of,
by the way, Alden, do you know yet whether you're going to be in your normal routine? As far as you know, are you going to be going to every game home and road?
I don't think I'm going to be traveling. I also have two small kids at home, so I don't know that I'd want to
sure.
sign up for that. But covering baseball this year, or covering sports in general, is not going to be how it is any other year, because none of us are going to have any access to players whatsoever. I was talking to somebody about it today. I think we're allowed in the stadium. I think each team can designate 35 media members and 40 members of a broadcast group to have access to the stadium. But all we'd be doing is sitting in a press box and watching the game. We can't go into the clubhouse.
Right. You
I'll
no
be on
access.
Camera this
right.
year. I
right.
can't interview players on camera.
Yeah, it's going to be a different world. You're right. Hey, thank you very much for doing this. Most of all, stay safe, man.
Thank you, guys. You too.
All right, there's Alden Gonzalez. And Brian, Michael and I found out today, we expected it, but we found out today that we're going to be doing the games from Los Angeles. So are Bill McDonald and Stu Lance. I think that's going to be the case with almost every team broadcaster. And from what I'm hearing, even the TNT guys are probably going to be in a studio in Atlanta.
I would think that those guys were there, like you would have maybe one TNT sideline reporter or two TNT sideline reporters allowed in, so you could cover the broadcast, a couple ESPN people. But anybody who's normally operating or can operate from a studio will operate from a studio. I mean, honestly, you guys do such a good job, John. You know, play by play, I've seen Dave Denholm do it, you know, with the soccer broadcast that we have, you know, with LAFC, who are, by the way, are also starting up, which is awesome. Like, you guys do such a good job. You can't tell if you're calling a game on TV or not. I mean, obviously you want to be there, but our experience listening to you guys isn't significantly different because you do your job so well. So, I mean, better than nothing, that's for sure.
All right, coming up next, we got the most unusual response to a segment we did on the show yesterday. I was asked about it at least 10 times today. Do you know the segment I'm talking about?
Oh, I don't want to guess, but I will.
All right, I'll tell you what it is. Coming up. But I'm stunned that
I completely ruined that for you, John. I'm sorry. That was very
no. That's okay. You didn't say no. You stopped short of ruining it. We'll tell you what it is coming up next. Frank Kamenetsky and for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason and Ireland show. Brian Kamenetsky's filling in for Mace. And yesterday there was a question that went viral on Twitter that a bunch of sports people got into. We asked, what movie snuck up on you and made you cry, where you never saw it coming? And I talked about how, for me, it was Mr. Holland's Opus, like at the end when the movie kind of all comes to a crescendo and he realizes his life wasn't wasted and I just lost it. So, Brian, I'm like running around today. I was at a gas station. I was at Ralph's. And people are walking up to me and going, Blue Lagoon. And I said, excuse me? Blue Lagoon made me cry. I go, what the hell? I don't even remember Blue Lagoon. What happened in Blue Lagoon? And or like somebody else, when I was at the gas station, did something bad or sad happen at the end of The Great Santini?
Oh, geez, it's been so long since I've seen that. Yeah, probably.
I remember. Okay, so here's some more that came up on my timeline. What happens in October Sky? Do you know?
Oh, that's a Cameron Crowe movie that I don't remember because it's not very good.
Normally, Cameron Crowe movies are all good.
Not this one.
Okay. All right, how about...
I don't remember.
How about Onward? I don't even know what that's about. Do you?
Onward is the new... It's the new Pixar movie where... yes, this one will make you cry. I kind of teared up a little bit. We watched it with the kids. It's all about a boy who gets like the opportunity to kind of meet the father that he never really knew. His dad died when he was really young. We talked about this yesterday. All Pixar movies are incredibly depressing at the beginning.
Is Coco a Pixar movie?
Coco is a Pixar movie, yes.
Somebody said that's another one that'll make you cry. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's all about, well, anything that's sort of about family and relatives and going back and thinking about like those all, especially once you get a little bit older. Inside Out makes me cry. Like, you know, they literally have a character named Sadness, so it's not like it's sort of designed to do that. Yeah, I mean, that's a good one. My brother texted me, he heard about that topic, and he texted me about the time he got so high during Beaches that when it got really sad, he was laughing. He was the only person in the theater that was laughing while everybody else was crying. Yeah, that was but remember, that was a point in his life where, you know, where you make those sorts of decisions. Beaches came out in 1988, so that happened.
All right, Kevin Reese just texted me, A Beautiful Mind. What happens at the end of A Beautiful Mind that's sad? I remember watching I don't remember that either. But anyway, it was for that topic struck a nerve. I mean, people were walking up to me all the time. I mean, I'm just randomly shouting out movies at me today, and I couldn't figure out. I went, oh, yeah, the crying thing. And, you know, it all kind of turned around. All right, Lindsay just mentioned something in the last break. Lindsay, you say that there is a movement in some circles that people want to get rid of playing the national anthem before sporting events. True or untrue?
Yes, that's according to a story that I saw on Yahoo. I don't think it's even before sports. I think they just want to get rid of the current national anthem and replace it with something else.
Well, Brian, I've said before that I like the national anthem before games. I think it's a really cool kind of patriotic moment that I enjoy. I enjoy standing. I like listening to people perform different versions of it, you know, because I do what I do for a living. I've heard thousands of versions of the anthem. So I'd be disappointed if it went away. But I can't tell you, and I've made this argument on the show before, why we do it. For example, I went back and looked up the origin of it. It started in 1918 as a way to honor soldiers that had died in World War I. And it just kind of hung around. And now, of course, it's become somewhat of a political issue. And I've mentioned before in the show, we don't carry the anthem on TV or radio. When they go to the anthem, we go to a commercial. If you're at the game, it's kind of a moving moment. To me, we don't like, if you're going to make the argument that we should play the national anthem whenever we're gathered in large groups, we don't play it at concerts. We don't play it at
not most of them
movies. We don't, you know, it's, we just do it at sporting events. They don't do it at golf tournaments.
Yeah, but there's really two questions. It's like, do you bother playing any song that's the national anthem in front of a sporting event? I personally, I don't think it's necessary. I mean, you could play God Bless America, you know, halftime of or the seventh inning or whatever, like you do and all that. And I think you can play, you know, you can honor military members and all this other that you normally do. But you look around during the national anthem and when it's being played, and like three quarters of the people aren't paying attention. Three quarters of the people are, you know, checking their phones or looking at other stuff and doing different things. I don't know if it really gets the respect that it necessarily deserves. And then there's the other question of just whether or not the song itself, like, which was never really meant to be sung. It was a march. Is the right song itself to be the national anthem? So there's a lot going on here with this question.
Brian, my friend Dan, who's a local golf pro here, points out that you are confusing October Sky with Vanilla Sky.
Which
is the Cameron Crowe movie.
I've been bad on movies today because earlier in the show I confused Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom with Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. So I'm not on my A game today.
Yeah, but nobody,
I think it's because No, I got a tweet about it, and I think it's because I'm so concerned about things like Tinder, the Tinder segment, and getting that right. That's all new, and I had to write a game. I'm nervous.
Well, apparently, according to Dan, Vanilla Sky, the Cameron Crowe movie, you're right, is not good. October Sky has a young Jake Gyllenhaal and is great. So there you go. But back to the anthem debate. I think that, for example, if they play the anthem this year before sporting events, you're going to see a ton of people take a knee, a ton of people in the NBA. And the question is, I wonder if the TV networks will cover it, because in this particular case, there won't be any fans there to see it. You know, like I told you before, the standard operating procedure when you televise or broadcast a game over the radio is you're looking to monetize any downtime in the game. You're looking to sell that time so you can make money. And so everybody, unless it's like the NBA Finals or the All-Star game, you don't see the anthem. So do you think because of the political ramifications that TV networks will show the anthems in Orlando or show the anthems when they start playing baseball?
I think they will. I think they will because it's now newsworthy. It's part of the story. And I actually, honestly, I think that may be something that is negotiated by the players, especially in the case of the NBA, that, you know, if we're going to go down there, like, we want you to show the anthem. We want you to show what we're doing during the anthem because it's part of our way of making sure people understand that we're playing basketball, but we're also making, you know, keeping the emphasis on racial justice and the issues that have come up over the last few weeks. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the players demanded it.
Or Brian, they could negotiate. Look, while you're running commercials, we want 30 seconds of that break to get our message out.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there are a lot of ways to do it, but I think that's definitely one of them.
All right. Still coming up is Game of Games. And, it will feature a game put together by Brian, which is the first time someone other than Mason and I has done Game of Games. So we'll see how that goes. That's coming. We got a visit. Who is that? Is that Grace?
Yeah, can you say hi? The baby found me in the car. She is now sitting shotgun.
Excellent. Hi, Grace.
Can you say hi? Say hi. She doesn't perform.
Unlike her, right. Her brother.
There we go.
All right, more coming up next. Mason in Ireland, ESPN LA. All right, today it's Brian Kamenetsky in Ireland as we are building up to Game of Games, which is coming up in about 10 minutes. And, Brian, I wanted to circle back to something we covered earlier in the show, and you may hear from Grace Kamenetsky, who has joined Brian and is sitting in his lap. How old is Grace now, Brian?
Grace is about 20 months now, almost.
All right, so coming up on two. So
yeah, she's practically full grown.
Yes,
and
you may hear.
Currently, we are the sunroof is opening and the sunroof is closing because we're doing the show from the car, and she is intrigued.
Good to know. All right, I want to circle back to something that we talked about in the first hour of the show. The NBA today shared with its players their security plan to help enforce what Mason would call the integrity of the bubble. The ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex, which is going to host all these NBA teams. And one thing that came out of it, Brian, was the league will use local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies, as well as contracted security professionals to help keep the bubble secure. There will be no law enforcement within the campus. Law enforcement will only be used outside of it to keep the campus secure. Now, one thing the players, Michelle Roberts and Chris Paul, that they were very concerned about, at least initially, was to make sure that these players didn't appear to be on lockdown, that that the players were kind of had some type of freedom to do what they wanted to do. But but it sounds like that still happens, that they're going to be able to do whatever they want inside the walls. But league security will ensure all venues and team hotel campuses are closed to non-credentialed individuals. There'll be secure checkpoints, credential control, and roving security inside and outside the perimeter of every location in use. Do you think it's going to work?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, but I think this is really important to remember. And look, I get the optics of all of this down from, you know, you don't want players to feel like they are in prison. You don't want it to even seem like they're in prison, even if it's a nice one like Disney World. You obviously have to be very sensitive at the moment. While all of these guys are so many of them are united to fight the questions of racial injustice and police brutality and police misconduct, that the NBA is contracting with the police to keep these people where they're supposed to be. You know, like, the optics could be really bad here. But the other thing you have to consider, and I think this is really a lot of what the NBA is thinking, you have to keep the players safe. You have to keep people out of this bubble. You have to keep in, you know, the NBA is an incredibly public institution. People all, you know, think about all the stuff that people do to try to get near athletes. And, you know, people are going to try to sneak on and want to be a part of it and get inside and be, you know, we know what hotel the Lakers are at. We know what hotel the Bucks are at. Like, we know where all of these guys are, where they're going to be at every point of the day, because it's all prescribed. Security is a real question. And so I think they have to be very sensitive to the optics. I think you have to avoid interactions between, you know, police and players. I don't know why there would be any, but, like, you understand what I'm getting at. But mostly you have to keep the players safe, and that means keeping people out.
And it sounds like they're committed to that, that they are really going to use all the security at their disposal to keep people out. You know, there's been a lot of talk of why baseball might not work, why football might not work. This is and of why I think basketball has the best shot, is that Adam Silver and Chris Paul and all these guys have done whatever they can do to minimize. I mean, they're going to get positive coronavirus tests, but when they do, they have put every safety protocol you can in. Baseball and football aren't doing that. There's a clear difference.
Well, it's just one of these things where everybody is going to, but what baseball and football do is going to change as it gets closer. Football's not really doing anything right now because they don't really have to. When we talked to Alden about this, like, they have a lot of rules, but I think they, baseball rosters are so big. The clubhouses are so big. And, like, the pool of players is so big. I don't think they can, I think they're trying to avoid saying definitively what the response is always going to be to every scenario, because they just don't know it yet.
Right. And I think that that is that's the great unknown, is what's going to change between now and the end of July when all these teams are going to try and get it up. We mentioned earlier in the show that the Hall of Fame game, which was scheduled for August 6th, has already been canceled. So the NFL has already canceled their first showcase preseason game between the Steelers and the Cowboys. And it sounds like they're going to induct this year's Hall of Fame class next year. They're just going to do a double class next year, because that's something you would want to have fans at when people get inducted into the Hall of Fame. But
it makes it more special. You can't do it virtually. It's the same thing with the NBA. You can't be putting that class of guys in with nobody in the crowd, you know, Kobe and KG and all that. Yeah, that's got to be wait until you can do it right, and that's fine.
All right, coming up next, we've got a segment called Game of Games, which we do at the end of the show every day. Basically, it's a competition that lasts the entire month, and right now, Lindsay has the lead. She has 3 wins. I have 2. Funch has 1. Brian has written the game. And I only have a couple of days to catch Lindsay because, one day. I've got to win today because next week, Brian, I'm not here, and then July starts. So my only hope to get into the winner's circle is to win your game next. How do you like my chances?
I think I would favor you over the other competitors. So I think you've
got a chance. Let's see if I can live up to it. Game of Games is next. Brian Kamenetsky in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, time for Game of Games. We compete every day in some different stupid game that one of us makes up. Today, that honor goes to Brian Kamenetsky. Lindsay will play. Michael Funchess will play. I will play. Brian, what is today's game?
Well, as everybody knows, it is Global Beatles Day. And so I have a game around the Fab Four, the original Fab Four. I am going to give you a song, and I need you to tell me which song was higher on the Billboard 100. I'll give you 2 songs, I should say. You tell me which ones were higher on the Billboard 100. One song might be higher, one song would be lower, and then they could also be a tie. So tie is an option here. Higher, so you have to tell me which song was highest on the charts, or which song, whether or not it was a tie. So here we go. The first sets of songs, Twist and Shout. Twist and Shout or Hey Jude. Which song was higher on the Billboard Hot 100, or were they tied?
You gotta say who goes first.
Oh, sorry. John, you go first.
I can't imagine that Hey Jude is higher. That's what I think. You got to go to you, Brian. You got to name
Lindsay.
A person.
Yeah, I said it, Lindsay.
All right, I'm gonna go Twist and Shout.
Bunchy.
I'll say Twist and Shout.
John Ireland on the board. Hey Jude was number 1, September 27, 1968. Twist and Shout went as high as number 2, April 3rd, 1964.
Very, very close.
Next set of songs, I Want to Hold Your Hand or She Loves You. Lindsay, I Want to Hold Your Hand or She Loves You.
I'm going to go tied.
Funchy?
She Loves You.
John?
I can't imagine they both didn't go to number 1. So I'm with Lindsay. I think it's a tie.
The correct answer is tie. They both went to number 1 in 1964. So John has 2, Lindsay has 1, and Funchy still scoreless. Eleanor Rigby or I Saw Her Standing There. Eleanor Rigby or I Saw Her Standing There. Funchy, you start.
I Saw Her Standing There.
John?
Wow. I Saw Her Standing There, I don't think was a giant hit. I'll go Eleanor Rigby.
Lindsay?
I'm going to go I Saw Her Standing There.
I Saw Her Standing There reached number 14 on March 20th, 1964, but Eleanor Rigby got all the way to 11 in September of 1966. So John Ireland, 3. Funchy still not on the board. And Lindsay with 1.
Funchy and I are Madonna, really showing our age here.
Yeah, Lady Madonna or Strawberry Fields Forever.
Oh, 2 drug songs.
John.
It's back to me, huh? Lady Madonna, or what was
Lady
the other
Madonna
one?
Or Strawberry Fields Forever.
My sense of those two, it came late in their careers. I'm not sure. I'll go Lady Madonna.
Lindsay?
Well, since John is dominating in this, I'm going to agree with him and say Lady Madonna.
Funchy.
I'll say Strawberry Fields Forever.
The correct answer is Lady Madonna. Ah. April 1968, it reached number four. Strawberry Fields Forever only got to number eight. John,
wait a minute, Brian,
commanding 4-2 lead.
But Brian, how many of these are there? Because Funch could be on his way to a Curtis.
I got enough to make it embarrassing if he does.
Okay, we normally go seven. Okay,
okay.
So how many? You've done four so far? Let's go seven.
Four so far, yes.
Yeah, let's go seven because Funch is 0-4. Funch, I believe in you. You can do it. You can take the Curtis. All right.
Okay, so here we go. Next one. And Lindsay, you start. Yellow Submarine or Something? Yellow Submarine or Something?
I'm going to go Yellow Submarine.
Funchy.
I'll say Tide.
John.
Yellow Submarine and what was the other one?
Something from Abbey Road.
Boy, Something is such a great song. But Yellow Submarine was like an anthem. I'll go Yellow Submarine.
Yellow Submarine is the correct answer. It reached number two in September of 1968. Something got as high as number three in 1969. Lindsay, what did you say there?
She said
Yellow Submarine.
Yellow Submarine. Wait, how does
All
something
right, you're
go?
You're still in it.
Something in the way she
moves.
Oh,
moved. Okay. Yep. I like that song.
All right, so two more. Revolution and I Love Her. Revolution and I Love Her. Lindsay, you go first.
I'm going to go with And I Love Her.
Boy, they're,
nice singing.
Such,
extra points for that.
These are
Funchy.
Such great songs.
I know. These are two really good songs, so I'm going to have to say Tide.
What did you say? I'm sorry.
Tide.
He's going Tide.
All right. John?
I'll go Revolution. So you have
it's
one
a tie.
Answer. It is.
It's
Funchy.
A tie.
Yeah. Oh.
Funchy on the board. It's a tie. They both reached number 12. All right.
So this is it, right?
This is it. This is the okay. last one. We'll do 8 days a week versus Do You Want to Know a Secret? 8 days a week versus Do You Want to Know a Secret?
I got to go first because I'm yeah. in the lead. I'll go 8 days a week.
Lindsay.
So I think it's 8 days a week, too. But if I guess that, I can't win, right?
Well, you
that
can't win
true.
Anyway because I got a two-thing lead on you. So guess what you think is right.
I'm just going to guess 8 days a week.
Funchy?
8 days a week.
It is 8 days a week. When number one in March of 1965, Do You Want to Know a Secret, reached number two in May of 1964. Congratulations, John Ireland. You got 6 of 7. That's very good.
Yeah, but I'm still tied with Lindsay. And Lindsay, all you have to do to pass me is win one game between tomorrow and all next week. So I like your chances, but at least I posted a score, as they say in golf. I put a score up in the scoreboard. Okay, by the way, most people consider the Beatles or the Rolling Stones the greatest band of all time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love the Beatles. I can't say enough good things about them, but the Rolling Stones have been around since the 60s. The Beatles were only around for 8 years, right? 62 to 70?
More or less, yeah.
It's so by default, it's got to be the Stones, right?
It seems impossible that the Beatles made... I think that it's actually more impressive that they were around for that short of a time, and they had so many hits, and they still are timeless.
There's a little bit of that LeBron MJ argument we were having before, like which is more impressive, the longevity or... being around, I used to be a Beatles guy, and over time, I've become more of a Stones guy. So I think sometimes it can shift.
The other thing we kicked around one day in the show, Brian, is there a more famous person walking around like that more people would recognize? So keep in mind, we're talking about your parents, my parents, me, Lindsay, my son. So all ages. Take athletes out of it. Okay. So you can't use LeBron. You can't use like Kareem. Is there a more famous person than Paul McCartney alive today, other than athletes?
I don't know, like the Queen?
But would more people...
I'm trying to think. I think more people probably know Paul McCartney.
My son wouldn't recognize... Okay, Lindsay, if the Queen walked in and sat down next to you in a restaurant, would you recognize her?
I would, yes.
I only would if she had a corgi with her. You know, she has those corgis, that those dogs that run around with her all the time. The Queen.
It's also a testament to the kind of places that Lindsay eats, that the Queen would also eat there.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I don't know.
Right, if we allow, like, which one?
The current one? You know, well, I would, really, but, you know.
Yeah, I would think, wouldn't President Obama get recognized more than President Trump?
Nah, I don't think so. I think Trump is pretty recognizable, but not in a good way.
He might get a warmer reception in more places, but I don't know if that means he's more recognizable.
Huh. So if you let athletes in, if you let LeBron, Cristiano Ronaldo, Tiger, would they have a bigger recognizability factor than Paul McCartney?
No. The most famous non-athletes are, you know, Beyonce has a higher recognizability factor than like LeBron does. We always overestimate the popularity of athletes. So somebody like Beyonce or like
the one thing about athletes though is they're big. Like Kareem is probably instantly recognizable because he's 7 feet tall.
Right, but a lot of people would just look at him and go, "Who's that really tall guy? That guy's really tall. I wonder if he played basketball." Like I guarantee you, people come up to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar all the time and ask him, "You're so tall. Did you play basketball?" It happens all the time.
No, come on.
Absolutely. Get Kareem on the phone. I guarantee you it happens.
All right, coming up next, we'll get Slee. No way that happens. We'll get Slee in here, do a little crosstalk. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, time to do a little crosstalk. Do we have Slee? Slee, are you there?
Yes, right here. Still trying to figure out. Cam, you don't think, BK, you don't think everyone would recognize Kareem, huh? That's a tough one.
Alan, I'm telling you, people, we always overestimate how many, the amount of people in L.A. who don't know who LeBron James is would be jaw-dropping to people. I'm not saying it's like
95%
of the town. No, I'm telling you, I bet 35% of Los Angeles doesn't know who LeBron James is.
Not that
he
big
plays
of a
on
star.
The Lakers.
No
but,
way.
But not that. Yeah,
no
not that
way.
Big of a star. JaVale McGee, if he's walking around, or Dwight, you're saying, "Oh my gosh, who, look at that huge, you know, that huge person. He must play basketball." That's different. But not LeBron. I don't think LBJ.
I am 100% sure that, you know, a guy like Kareem, you know, an LA institution, a legend, has people who, like I said, walk up to him and say, "Wow, you're really tall. Did you play basketball?" With no idea who he is.
I was talking to James Worthy a couple weeks ago, and he was telling me a story about how Worthy has this deep booming voice, and he was in a voiceover audition, and he ended up losing the voiceover to LL Cool J, and he said to me, he goes, "Well, what are you going to do? It's LL Cool J, man. He's more famous than me." And I said, "I'm not so sure in Los Angeles LL Cool J is more famous than you." And he goes, no, 100%, for sure he is. What do you guys think? Who's more? You walk into a restaurant, back when we were allowed to go to restaurants. In one corner of the restaurant is James Worthy. In the other corner is LL Cool J. Funch, who gets more attention?
We're talking in L.A., right?
Yep.
Worthy.
Brian, what do you think?
At their peak?
LL now, Cool J. Today.
Today, probably Worthy, only because, you know, LL Cool J is not quite, but like he's still like doing shows. It'd be really close.
Well, I've got Lindsay working on trying to get him. He's promoting something. Lindsay, did you get anywhere with that?
Not yet. Still working on it, but I think he's definitely more recognizable
than James Worthy.
Yeah. I mean, think about all the women that are obsessed with, or at some point were obsessed with LL Cool J. He he was like a sex symbol when he was a rapper too, you know?
Well,
I think most of those women would probably not know who James Worthy is.
Kelly, would you recognize LL Cool J in a restaurant if you saw him?
Oh, yes.
Would you recognize James Worthy?
Yeah.
You would?
All right, okay. So
who would you make a bigger deal out of, though? but she'd make a bigger deal out of it.
Well, that was Lindsay's theory. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But John,
that would be awesome.
but John, there is part of that kind of out of sight, out of mind. Worthy's on every single game. Got the Worthy clap going on Spectrum Sportsnet. I do think in LA, just because of his history, the Showtime era, all that stuff, I think definitely James Worthy would be the
Alan,
would be noticed.
I don't accept
more.
I don't accept the premise of your argument that LL Cool J is out of sight, out of mind.
Isn't LL Cool J? Isn't he on
his
TV?
Right, he's on one of the. My wife's yelling at me from the kitchen. He's on one of the most popular shows on CBS.
Wait, wait a minute. Is he on one of the CSIs or the NCISs?
NCIS, I think.
Okay.
NCIS LA.
I can tell you for sure that like every single one of my female friends has no clue who James Worthy is. Mm-hmm. It's half the population.
John, I think you also, the other part of the story that I think is fascinating is like the idea of James Worthy like sitting in a room like with his script just waiting to go in and do some voiceover auditions. You walk in and like it's you and LL Cool J and James Worthy up to the same role. That to me seems weird.
Let me tell you something, man. If you can get a good voiceover gig, like do you guys know who the voice of Mercedes is?
Yeah, it's John Hamm.
Okay, do you know who the voice of Kaiser Permanente is?
Allison Janney.
Right. Brian, they make millions.
Oh, yeah.
Within
is it every time? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because and it's easy. Like I've played golf with Sam Jackson before. He could live off of those Capital One commercials. Mm. Like not to mention he's in every other movie. But
right, but Sam Jackson has to get dressed to do those. Like you know, John Hamm doesn't have to do that for Mercedes. He just does it. It's great. Like we have friends who are good friends of ours that are voiceover people. And you know they've done real well for themselves. Like it's a good gig.
If you can get a permanent gig, if you can be like the voice of something,
that's one of the things that Freddie does. You know, our friend Freddie Prinze Jr. He voices does a lot of voiceover work. Does a lot of the Star Wars stuff.
He's on those
shows.
I did a voiceover once and got beat on the last day by DB Sweeney. Remember DB Sweeney?
I do.
I'm like, why am I competing against DB Sweeney? Go make a movie, man. Come on.
What's DB Sweeney's connection to sports? You know what famous character he played?
He was a hockey player and he was in a rom-com with an ice skater, right?
That's not what I was thinking. You're probably right, but I was actually thinking of Eight Men Out.
Oh, yeah, he played Joe Jackson.
He played Joe Jackson.
He played Shoeless Joe.
My wife just yelled.
She's still going on
ice skating movie.
Your wife and I think alike. Great minds think alike.
This is the only way she listens to the show is if I literally do it from the other room. She has no choice.
You're right. She can't get away from you. Sliwa, what do you got, man? What's happening with you?
Did you guys hit at all on this Rob Lowe stuff? Well, he was on Part of My Take. Did you guys talk about that at all?
No, but I think we've got some of the sound. Do we not, Funch? We don't have it. Okay, so explain, Sliwa, what it is.
Well, basically, he goes on, you know, Part of My Take. You know, obviously a very popular podcast. So he goes on the podcast, and he's wearing what looks like a Houston Astros hat. And I guess him and his son made these hats, and it's the asterisk. Remember when it first happened where it was MLB came out and said, all right, the Astros cheated in 2007 and 2017. And they started kind of changing the way the hat is. So anyways, they got the asterisk on there. So he goes on his rant, really just kind of talks about, I feel so bad for Kershaw, and continues on this long, long rant. But I got a question that has actually nothing to do with the baseball part of things. Do you guys ever watch Parks and Rec or no?
I've seen it, sure.
I'm not a Parks and Rec guy, but I know Rob was on that for a while, and I know Amy Poehler was on that for the whole time, right?
Yeah, yeah, both of them on there. But what is, because he has such a, they talk a little bit about the show, you know, Parks and Rec, and I know he's in other things as well. But when you guys look back, you guys are not familiar with the character Ron Swanson or no?
No.
Okay, so Ron, okay, you know how, John, you absolutely love, let's use as an example, you love Leon, right, from Curb.
Love
that's
him.
Technically that could be one of the best characters. You know, I know obviously it just depends what shows that you like, but Ron Swanson, and I immediately thought of this because I think of Parks and Rec. I did this a couple days ago as well. What is it? Tell me, like, your go-to character in any sitcom that is, you know, arguably your favorite character, is there one that pops out? Because the moment I'm seeing Rob Lowe, and Rob Lowe is protecting the Dodgers like crazy. He's talking about the Giannastros, all that stuff. It goes back to kind of his character in Parks and Rec, and again goes to this guy Ron Swanson. BK,
literally,
John,
literally your favorite character on TV.
Literally, who's your favorite character on TV? Is there one that stands out?
Mine might be Larry David from Curb.
That's what I was going to say for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say the guy. Yeah. And the one that I quote probably more than anybody is Homer Simpson.
Okay. Michael Scott. Unbelievable. Kramer. You got to. I think Kramer, you got to kind of throw into the mix as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know who else. I think those are probably mine. And Leon, I throw in there too.
Yeah, best TV character of all time.
I mean, you start getting into like, you want to really get deep into it. Now you got to go back to like Cheers and Ted Danson and, you know, All in the Family and some of those characters are, you know, you start to draw back. Like those are some of the landmark ones.
Yeah.
I grew up with Alex P. Keaton. That was a good one. Of course, the Cosby
I thought the
show,
both of you would have like
answer,
a list.
No.
I thought the both of you would have like a list of 10 right off the bat, just simply because I know you guys talk so much about certain sitcoms and everything. But the Larry David, I know, John, for you and Mace, you guys talk Curb all the time.
Yeah. Curb to me is Seinfeld on steroids. It's the funniest half hour comedy of all time. And if you've never seen Curb Your Enthusiasm, I strongly encourage you to watch it. All right, so let me get you guys to react to this. Shams has tweeted the NBA's modified dress code for the remainder of the 2019-2020 season. Okay, you ready? Players not required to wear a sport coat on the bench can wear short or long sleeve polos for team league business. Male and female coaches also short, long sleeve NBA polo shirts. Have we seen the last sport coat on an NBA bench, Brian? Does this give them the carte blanche to treat the rest of the season like a summer league game?
I think that's that absolutely. But who wears long sleeve polo shirts?
I have several of them. When
for cold golf days, I would assume.
Right, but they're Lakers. The Lakers gave them to me. I mean, they're Lakers long sleeve polo shirts. They're great for, you know what they're frankly great for? Flights. Because, you know, you go on an airplane and sometimes the planes get cold, but you don't really want to wear a sweatshirt because it could also be hot. You just wear these thin long sleeve polos and they're great. Or if you're going to like
it's brisk in here. I think you're going to see some interesting fashion in Orlando just because guys aren't, you know, they'll be able to bring stuff in or they'll order things or whatever. And they'll have dry cleaning and that and all that stuff. But, you know, you're not bringing everything with you, but you're going to be there for a long time. So like, I'm really interested to see like what the dudes like Russell Westbrook, you know, James Harden, the guys who really take fashion seriously, how much stuff are they going to bring with them into the bubble? Like, how many crates of stuff are they going to have things shipped to them? Can Russell Westbrook have all of his fashion shipped to him? I don't know.
I just thought of a great bet for Mason and I. When they start letting us go back to games, to Laker games, Mason and I should have a bet, and the loser has to wear the Russell Westbrook big frames with no lenses in him for an entire game. You just have to sit there, and you can't tell anybody why you're doing it. You just have to sit there, and if somebody goes, "What's up with those glasses?" You got to go, "What do you mean?"
I could see Mace wanting to win that. I could see Mace saying,
"No, he wouldn't." But plus, he wouldn't be able to see. He needs glasses to see now.
That's right.
I need glasses to read. He needs them to see.
John, you mentioned a little bit earlier. You guys talked a little bit about Vince Carter. You know, this doesn't happen often. I guess I almost feel like I take away from how great of a player that he was for so many years. What I mean by that is I just so immediately associate with him his just high flying, his unbelievable dunks, the slam dunk contest. And that's not fair. You know what I mean? Like that's just such one small portion of his game. but he was so unbelievable at it that that's always the first thing that I think of anytime I talk about Vince Carter. That's what I want to talk about with somebody else. Funches and I used to do this all the time on Lakers Talk. We'd have topics about all NBA stuff and it'd come up greatest dunker of all time, whatever it was, right? Like we would just be chatting about it. Doesn't it almost kind of take away from how great of a basketball player he was? Because he was so unbelievable at dunking that that's the first thing I always think of.
Although, okay, so Brian, you say, and I think you're right, based on longevity, that he'll probably get into the Hall of Fame. But
I don't think there's any question he gets into the Hall of Fame.
Well, here's the question. Should you be in the Hall of Fame if you were never – at any point of your career, first-team All-NBA? Because he never was. He was an 8-time All-Star. He was named to the second team once and to the third team once. If you're going to say Hall of Fame, most of those guys have multiple All-NBA selections. If you're All-NBA, that means you're one of the best 15 players in that given year. First team, second team, third team. He has two All-NBA selections, the second team in 2001 and the third team in 2000. Now, that's the case against him. The case for him is that he's an 8-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year, slam dunk champ, unbelievable college player, and remember that it's not the NBA Hall of Fame, it's the Basketball Hall of Fame, and just insane longevity.
Mm-hmm.
Played with both Dell and Steph Curry. Think about that for a second.
Wow,
played both
that's
with
right.
Dell and Steph
in Toronto. That's right. Jeez.
But Brian, if I'm saying Hall of Fame, you're saying absolute lock, no question, first ballot, never first team All NBA, and only two All NBA selections ever. Couldn't I make a case against him?
He could. It just wouldn't be a very good one. I mean, you're talking about a guy who averaged 20 points a game 10 times. You know, he's sixth. I'm just looking at some of his numbers. Sixth in all-time offensive win shares. He's third all-time in points or among active players. 20th career in points. I'm just looking around here. Again, you said the 8 All-Star games. He was 11-time player of the week. That's my favorite NBA award. I feel like they should send the parents of those people like a bumper sticker that says my son was the NBA player of the week at whatever, and they put it on their car. But like you're just like Basketball Reference has him at 95% to get in. He was one of the best players of his era. He's certainly one of the 100 or 150 probably best guys to ever play, and that's good enough to get you in. I mean, like he's not the best player. But he's a Hall of Fame caliber guy. I don't think there's an argument.
Okay, so here's my argument. Chris Webber is not in the Hall of Fame. He is only a 5-time All-Star. Carter was an 8-time All-Star. But Webber was first-team All-NBA once, 3 times All-Second Team, and 1-time All-Third Team. So he's on 5 All-NBA teams. And like Carter, won Rookie of the Year. Couldn't I argue that before Carter goes in, Weber should go in?
Sure. I don't have a problem with that.
See what I'm saying? It's not as clear-cut as you're making it sound.
But my argument to that would be, I think that go ahead and put Chris Webber in the Hall of Fame, not don't put Vince Carter in. So it's just like to me, I am not as restrictive as some people are when it comes to being of like, I feel like, you know, you say the guy's name and you'd be like, yeah, like what's your gut feeling? Yes, no on that player. Vince Carter means absolutely a yes. And I don't have a problem with putting in Chris Webber. I think he's one of the most underrated players of any era. And so instead of being like, well, no, this guy, I would just say, okay, that guy's probably worth it too. And even if somebody's not as good as, you know, the 15 best guys who are in there, it's not a museum that only honors the 15 best players. It's it goes all the way down. And then you add college and all that other stuff. And I think both those guys could go in. I don't have a problem with that.
When you start looking at, because there's a list of players that just say should be in the Hall of Fame, or you can make a case for. I think it's actually funny, John. Chris Webber probably, out of all the players that are on this list, I think he's the one that pops up most where you're like, yeah, Webber should be in the Hall of Fame. And I think Vince Carter is one of those that, like you said, BK, what's your natural, like your instant gut reaction is, do you think that guy's a Hall of Famer? I think more times than not, and I think we all agree Vince is going to get in, you would just say, all right, it wasn't just his 10 seasons of scoring, 20 plus points. It was also the longevity, like you mentioned, John, 22 years. That definitely has something to do with it. And I think you just look at his skill set, what he brought to the game, doing at such a high level. I think he's definitely going to be one of those that get in. But the first ballot. You said first team. That's interesting. I didn't know that he was that far out of the mix when it came to first, second, or third, especially when we're always looking at like Kobe and you look at some of his accolades and his highlights and everything else. He was basically in it virtually every year.
Right. How many of those years though were Jordan too? I mean, you got to kind of factor
and
that
Kobe.
In.
All right. So Brian, let me do a comp. You say that one thing that jumps out at you is he averaged 20 points a game 10 times, right?
He's a lot of years where he had. Go ahead, John. I think I know where you're going with this.
Okay, so he had 20. He averaged 20 points a game 10 times, right, Brian?
At least. I'm going back here. Vince Carter, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I mean, some of these it's harder. Yeah, but at least 10 times. Yeah.
Okay, so I know another guy that has averaged 20 points a game 10 times. Carter's an 8-time All-Star. This guy's a 6-time All-Star, the guy I'm thinking
of. Okay.
Carter's a Rookie of the Year. This guy is a Rookie of the Year. This guy is 3 times All-Second Team, 2 times All-Third Team. So he's 5-time All-NBA. Vince is 2 times All-NBA. So my guy that I'm thinking of is a little statistically better but doesn't have Carter's longevity. So here's my question.
Put this guy in the Hall of Fame.
Blake Griffin, lock.
I think Blake Griffin will be in the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not so sure.
I'm not so sure.
Some of that is perception. Some of that is guys get hurt. And listen, but like when you kind of break it, there's no reason necessarily that Blake Griffin shouldn't be in the
Chris
Hall of
Webber
Fame.
Definitely put Chris Webber before Blake Griffin, wouldn't you?
Both of them. Yeah. I'd put Chris Webber before mm-hmm. both of them. But Vince is going to get in because 22 years is insane. 22 years in the NBA is insane.
He's one of the iconic players of his era. And so, I think the argument you make up against Blake is that he did a lot of that stuff on bad teams and, broke down, didn't play enough games. I mean, Vince Carter also played a lot more games than Blake did. And so Blake performed really well when he played. But, VC, has a lot more games in seasons where he played 80 games and something like that than Griffin does. And now I'm looking at his Hall of Fame probability and comps and things like that. But Blake Griffin is a stunningly good player.
Right. What does Basketball Reference say his Hall of Fame probability is?
55%.
And
it's higher than C-Web.
But Vince Carter's in the 90s?
95.
Yeah.
What's Chris Webber at?
Going in.
By the way, here's
16 or 17. But I think some
here's
of that
two
has to
guys,
do with, time that he's been out of the
Webber.
League.
Here's two guys that are going in for sure that most people don't equate. I mean, these are locks before all the people we've talked about. One is Dwight Howard and the other is Chris Paul. And people,
who doesn't think Chris Paul is a Hall of Famer?
Well, a lot of people don't think Dwight is, but look at his numbers. Dwight's going for sure.
They're looking at Dwight. They're just remembering
Dwight. They're just looking at his personality, right.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And his personality and all the snakes and the Stan Van Gundy press conference and all that. Dwight Howard was the most dominant defensive player for like 6 years in the NBA. He made a finals. He was, how many all-star teams has he made? Like, of course, Dwight Howard's going to the Hall of Fame.
All right, we'll get a little more crosstalk with Sliwa coming up next, 710 ESPN.
All right, crosstalk on 710 ESPN is sponsored by Power Pro Heating and Air and their Cross-Trade Power Pro Service Special. Here's another outstanding Cross-Trade service for our 710 listeners, a $59 AC tune-up. and safety inspection with temporary disinfect of your HVAC system. Visit PowerProPlumbing.com.
All right, Slee was here. Brian Kamenetsky's filling in for Mace. We were just talking about guys that are likely to make the NBA Hall of Fame. And then, Brian, what did you ask us? You asked us something.
I dove into a rabbit hole. So basketballreference.com has a calculation where they do Hall of Fame probability. And so we were talking about, like, Blake Griffin and other players like that. Blake Griffin is at 55% in terms of his Hall of Fame probability right now. There are a bunch of guys who are about 65% and over.
How many?
I will take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Give or take.
14. I can get a bunch of them. Okay, LeBron is one of the 14.
Yes.
Dwight. Correct. Dwight,
yes.
Howard.
99%.
All right, that's, yes, two. I'm going to say Steph is on that list. Steph Curry.
Steph is, yes, he has a 99.87% chance of getting the Hall of Fame.
Okay, Kevin Durant.
100%.
Chris Paul.
Could walk away from the game he's already in.
Okay. So how many is that? That's six?
Six. And then the fourth, that was a rough count, by the way. I went real quick.
So they have to be over 75%.
Over 65%. Over 65% chance of getting it.
I'm going to throw out a couple more. Don't give me any hints yet. All right. These are on the bubble. These could be wrong. Harden and Westbrook.
They're 99.9% both of them.
Wow.
So they're not even on the bubble. They are locks. They are stone cold locks.
So that's 7, 8. I got another one, Slee. I should have another one.
Mm-hmm.
Carmelo is going to be on this list.
98% chance getting in, and anybody who thinks it's not deserved hasn't been paying attention.
All right, so is Vince Carter, does he count, or are we taking him off because
he's
retired?
Yes, Vince Carter, no, because we'll count him.
All right, now here's one, Slee. Brian, this isn't a guess yet. Sleewe, do you think Kawhi is there already?
Yeah, definitely. I think Kawhi's on that list.
Kawhi. Mm-hmm. Kawhi, Brian.
Not yet. 55%.
Ah!
Not yet.
Really?
All right, so that's our first
Not
strike.
There yet.
So if he's
You gotta remember, Kawhi did not put up big numbers early in his career.
If he's not there, Alan, then I'm guessing Paul George isn't there either. All right, now here's
a little bit of a surprise.
I wouldn't do that, John.
Brian.
Paul George. Right on the line. 65% right on the line.
Okay, now, here's one that I'm pretty sure is there, but I could be wrong. This could be strike two. But he's got giant numbers. What about LaMarcus Aldridge?
LaMarcus Aldridge is 51% below the threshold.
Okay, so I've got two strikes now.
Thank you, Funchy.
I don't think Derrick Rose is there.
Oh God, no, that is no.
I don't think.
Think locally.
AD?
No.
Anthony Davis, 91%. Absolutely.
Already.
91.
Wow.
Already.
I just 91%. I thought AD would be too young.
It's reasonable, but nope.
How about Clay?
Clay is below the threshold, 51%, not
count.
There Sliwa, yet. Probably gets there eventually.
Sliwa was not approved to make an official guess.
That's correct.
Okay. So I still have two strikes. All right. So are we missing anybody like super? We said Chris Paul, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how about this? He's going to have his number retired by the Lakers at some point.
I got another one, John, if you
want
to waste one.
Wait a minute. Oh, it's Pau Gasol.
Pau, absolutely. Yeah. Pau Gasol, 93%.
Okay.
Thank you, Funchy.
All right, hey, Lindsay.
Yes.
What do you think about Kevin Love? He's got, like, monster career numbers.
There's no way.
Wait a minute. Sliwa, what do you think of Kevin Love? Remember, he was like an all-star in Minnesota every year, and now you won a title.
I'm going to say no on Kevin Love.
Brian, I'm rocking the boat and running the risk that it'll get us kicked out of the game. I'm going Kevin Love.
Kevin Love, 73% chance.
Wow.
Clears the bar easily.
I'm not hip so to, I guess, the NBA Hall of Fame voting.
You guys have named, there are three players left. Three players left.
I got two guys in mind.
One of whom, go ahead.
Oh, I just thought of one. Go ahead, Sue. Who you got?
All right, I'll throw, this might be a borderline one, Iguodala.
No way.
Where is he?
Never the best player on his own team. All right. If AD is in there, okay, then I've got to think Damian Lillard is in there.
Yeah, that's the other one I have.
Because
Lillard, 68%, actually closer to 69%, so he clears the bar. That is absolutely right.
All right. And
two left.
Okay. If Dame is in there, Lindsay, you're going to hate this one. What about Kyrie?
Kyrie is right at the line. He is rounding up to 65%. Hall of Fame, 65%, also Hall of Fame of people who think the earth is flat.
He gets
in on that. Now, the last one is really hard.
Let me ask you a couple questions about the last one.
All right.
Is he still a good player?
Yes.
Is he – so it's got to be somebody older, right? He's older, right? Oh, north of 30.
He is. Yes, absolutely. Well north.
Okay. Sleewell, I'll let you decide which guy it is. But I think it's either DeMar DeRozan or Kyle Lowry. It's one of those guys that's played guard in Toronto forever, and then they traded DeRozan. I would lean towards Lowry because he's won a title. Remember, Lowry was in
Houston.
But DeRozan's been a better scorer than Lowry. I'll go to DeRozan.
Oh, John, no, you should have gone Lowry.
It's no!
Close. It's, Lowry is an 85% probability of getting in the Hall of Fame. DeMar DeRozan is at 7%.
That's it? Oh, so I was totally barking up the right tree with Lowry.
You were exactly right, and I was super impressed. And then you talked yourself out of it.
I did.
Because Kyle Lowry is a tough pull.
Yeah, wow. Because I knew it couldn't be Giannis. He's too young. Hi, Grace.
I think the show's over.
You already said Clay. Yeah. I thought for a minute there that like a guy like Jimmy Butler could be in there.
Yeah, that's right. I was thinking Butler, too.
He's really close, but he's not there yet. Probably could be by the end of his career. But I just love that because people forget how good Kyle Lowry is. So I really liked that he was up that high. But that was a good pull, John. You did really well there.
Oh, except I didn't. Oh, Sliwa, geez, look what time it is.
How about that?
I know. That's what I said. How good this game was. It kept John Ireland on the air 4 minutes longer than he means
to. All right, so, Sliwa, that means tomorrow, 6:20.
Yeah,
I'm out.
6:20
tomorrow. Yeah, what do you got? What do you got coming up on the show, Alan?
Baxter Holmes is going to join the show, and George Castillo covers the Dodgers for the LA Times.
George Costanza is coming on your show?
Costanza,
now that's a character. Yes.
Costanza's coming.
All right.
And by the way, Alan, you're welcome. I just bought you 5 minutes.
Thank you,
Brian,
BK.
Thank you for doing this. Now go do something nice for Grace. She's obviously in need. All right. Mason and Ireland's done. Sliwa next, ESPN LA.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.